You know, one of the things the solar eclipse, remember that, reminded us is people will travel to have unique experiences, see things, and be part of events. We all saw how people congregated in areas that had the best view, the best safe view. And they all had to stay somewhere, and many used Airbnb. I want to share something with you I was once told. One of the wisest things you can do when you host an Airbnb is find events in your area and let people in that community know that your place is available for out-of-towners. Many did this with the eclipse. You can do this as well. Your home could be an Airbnb. Seriously, it doesn't have to be your whole place. I mean, it could be. You'd be surprised what people are looking for when they travel. It's simple and it's really, really smart. You might want to think about it. You could be sitting on a whole new revenue stream. Concerts, sporting events, conferences. People are always on the move. Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.ca/host.
I'll tell you who agrees with me. When this podcast drops, you know where I'm gonna be right and you're gonna be wrong? In the province of Manitoba.
Oh, yes, I know that is true.
Merrick hates Manitoba. Listen. He hates it. He has told me before it should be cut out of Canada with an X-Acto knife.
Plenty to get to on a Friday morning. Welcome to it once again, 32 Thoughts, the podcast, presented by the GMC Sierra Elevation. Shramati producing, Merrick and Friedman once again, and we'll start with the Philadelphia Flyers, who lose to the Montreal Canadiens on Thursday. Park that for a second, though. Is the story around Philadelphia Russian goaltenders or what, Elliot? Ivan Fedotov and Alexei Kolosov, to say nothing of, as I was told on Thursday night, maybe the best Russian goaltender of them all, Yegor Zavrygin, who was taken in the third round by the Philadelphia Flyers. But maybe that's a story for another day. What's happening with Philly and the goalies, Frege?
First of all, is that a real person, the third goalie you named?
Yes, it is. A third round draft pick of the Philadelphia Flyers playing in the MHL and the VHL.
Okay, so Kolosov, the Flyer fans knew that he was coming over towards the end of this season, and he is expected to start in the American Hockey League. That was expected. Now, what wasn't expected was the Fedotov situation. And so there were some rumblings on Thursday morning that something was up with Fedotov. And not long after I got that call, there was a tweet that came out from the KHL saying that Fedotov's contract in CSKA Moscow had been terminated. And basically that meant that he was a free agent. Sort of. He was free to leave his Russian contract, and his rights had been held by the Flyers. And for those of you who are familiar with this story, and Flyer fans would be, he signed a contract with the Flyers a couple of years ago. It was believed that he would be able to come to North America to play for them. They wanted him to come to North America and play for them. However, all of a sudden in Russia came the announcement that he was being accused of evading his military service and he was not allowed to leave. He was prevented from leaving, and instead he had signed a 2-year extension to play there. Well, it didn't go very well. He didn't play well. The word over there was he was clearly unhappy. You know, they also lost basically an arbitration case against the NHL, and they were found to be in violation. They just didn't care. They kept him there. But eventually, with the way he was playing there, from what I was told, and this is obviously a North American slant to this, it just became very clear to everybody that the current situation was untenable. He didn't want to be there. He wasn't playing well, and he wanted, and the Flyers wanted him in North America. And I think all the various parties, the International Ice Hockey Federation, the NHL, the Russian team, the Russian League, the Flyers had been working to get this done. And I think one of the reasons it was so secret is obviously whenever you're dealing with all of these various parties, there's a lot of moving parts and nothing is done until it's done. And So when the announcement came on Thursday that his contract had been terminated, I heard that he was coming to Philly and that he is going to play for the Flyers. And nobody denied that to me. People were very careful about saying where exactly it all stood, where he was in terms of transit, what was going to happen. But people told me, if you say that he is free to join with the Flyers and he will be joining the Flyers or was en route to joining the Flyers, you would be safe to do so. And that's where we are. And basically, his contract with Philadelphia had been tolled. And, for example, one of the most famous tolled contracts in the NHL was Alexei Yashin's. He sat out 1 year from Ottawa. And instead of that year being erased, when it's tolled, it's carried over. You don't get credit for having played it. So that one-year deal that Philadelphia signed him to was carried over. It's expected he will be joining the Flyers under that contract. Unless somebody tells me otherwise, he's going to be a UFA at the end of the season. But Philly gets a look at him. So one of the things that people were dealing with here and was slightly complicating, because it's really not that complicated compared to everything else that's happened here, is that Felix Sandstrom, Philly has used all four of their call-ups. After the trade deadline, the roster rules change a bit. You can have as many players on your roster as you want as long as you're under the cap. There's no longer a limit of 23 necessarily. However, you're only allowed four call-ups after the trade deadline, and Philly has used them all. So Felix Sandstrom is up on an emergency basis. And so yep. What everybody was trying to figure out is, could Sandstrom be sent back down? And once Fedotov is activated, he can be activated on that emergency basis. And I'm under the impression that all this is going to be worked out. But the bottom line is, after a very lengthy saga that really did turn ugly at one point, It appears as if Fedotov will get the opportunity to join and play for the Flyers. And if that's what he wants and that's what his family wants, good for him.
Yeah, that's what I was told, was that the plan was for Fedotov to play with the Philadelphia Flyers, and we get to see what a 6'8" goaltender looks like in the National
Hockey League. Because we've never seen that before.
We haven't seen that yet, Elliot. And Alexei Kolosov was going to Lehigh Valley. The one interesting, do you have anything, by the way, anything more on that situation? I want to sort of transition this to the Philadelphia Flyers, and I have a question for you around them right now. Anything more we think we should know about Kolosov or Fedotov right now?
I don't think so. Everything I just said there was what I know and what people told me. Like, the thing about these situations is there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. Like, you remember those stories about McGillney defecting or Peter Klima coming over, and they were very clandestine, and the world was a very different place then. And people said, yes, the world has changed, but still, these things are very complicated. This isn't just the NHL you have to deal with. This is Russia. This is immigration. This is getting the proper paperwork, visas, and whatever. And you should never jump to a conclusion. And while people were willing to say, yes, this is looks like it's going to happen, nobody's going to make an announcement until everything is done, because, these are complicated things. And so everything I've said here is what I know, and people have said you are safe to say, but you shouldn't really go any farther than that, and you shouldn't make any grand pronouncements until the NHL or someone else does so. But it is safe to say he is en route to joining the Flyers and is expected to play for them.
Excellent. Now, the Philadelphia Flyers themselves.
Yep.
So Thursday
good night for the Islanders.
Very good night for the Islanders. The Washington Capitals lost their game. The Philadelphia Flyers lost their game. Hey, 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 it's looking better for the Islanders. We're still
the
alive.
Red Wings lost
the New York
too.
Islanders. That's right. The Detroit Red Wings lost on Thursday as well. Again, we're playing the game of who wants these playoff spots. But for the Philadelphia Flyers, something really interesting I don't know whether, I mean, listen, it might only be one game, and maybe I'm just guilty of reading too much into one game, but when you look at the schedule that the Philadelphia Flyers have down the stretch here, not trying to offend any of these teams, but in comparison to the Washington Capitals or in comparison to the New York Islanders, or for that matter, the Detroit Red Wings, it's an easier schedule. You know, they had Montreal on Thursday. They have Chicago, then the Islanders, Buffalo, Columbus back to back, Montreal again, the Rangers, and then the New Jersey Devils. There are very, very winnable games here for the Philadelphia Flyers. What I can't help but thinking watching the game on Thursday was, is the pressure of expectation getting to this team that is in, well, supposed to be in, a rebuild right now?
All season long, it's been play.
You don't buy that?
I don't buy that. I think the Flyers are a little bit thin. Don't forget they're missing three defensemen who should be playing for them, right? And I think also Ersson, you know, they're down a goalie too. And so, look, Seeler's supposed to be back this weekend. Drysdale's not far away. And Daniel Briere said the other day that Rasmus Ristolainen, he's the one they're not sure about. But the other guys are coming back. And, you know, now they could have another goalie too. Although, you know, the adjustment Russia to North America, you know, could be a big one. You never know how someone's going to handle it. I just think that the Flyers, like there's been, I had a chance to talk to Keith Jones on Wednesday night. And by the way, Jones and Briere, there's one thing I don't like about these two guys. Their vaults. Their vaults. Like this is bad for reporting. You know, this is the second time. And I think it shows.
Keith, you used to be one of us. Come on.
Yeah, you know, and so is Briere. Like basically, yes. I believe he did some media work too. And they were tight on Gauthier before they traded him. They were tight on Mishkov around the draft. And the Russian factor, like I said, it's so difficult to handicap at times and difficult to get a handle on at times that you have to be quiet about this stuff. But, you know, one of the things I talked with Jones about on Wednesday is that I asked him, was there ever a time in this year where you really thought that you said the team, they're going to make it? Like they have proven to me that they're good enough. And he said, yes, many times. And he really credited the players a lot, especially some of their young players. But, you know, what he also said was, I think that we've learned that our team can handle the roller coaster of the season because they've showed at times, there have been times I thought that we were okay and they struggled, and I was like, uh-oh, is this it? And then they right themselves after they struggle. So when I look at the Flyers, I say, number one, they've shown more staying power than we expected, so we have to respect that. And number two, I think the depth has really been tested. And when I look at their, like I see some teams out there, like Toronto's a perfect example of this. Toronto's a team right now that when they're battling injuries or they're battling problems, they've proven they've got extra players who they can put in there, especially on defense, who can do the job for them. Like, for example, on Tuesday night, Liljegren gets hurt. Giordano plays for the first time in a month, and he scores. And between Benoit and going out and getting Edmondson, they've had guys like that all year. Philly, I think, is a little thinner. And now with their D coming back, I think they're going to be okay. You know, Jeff, the other thing is, I did want to mention something. I asked Keith Jones, like it's been a crazy couple weeks there. Like considering everything that has happened and you think everybody would be ecstatic about everything that's happened between Couturier and some of the other stuff, it's been really noisy there. And Jones had a really interesting comment about that. He said, I don't mind that. I think some teams are really afraid of that in this day and age, in the social media age. But Jones said that, you know, he reminded, like, when he got acquired by Philadelphia, he was like, wow, I can't believe some of the noise that's always around this team. But in the Ed Snyder, Bob Clark era, and those are two guys who knew what they were doing, they didn't mind that. They wanted the Flyers always to be known. Hey, the Flyers are here, or people are talking about the Flyers. And I really got the impression that in Jones's mind in particular, it's better that people are talking about us than nobody cares about us at all. And so I thought that was really fascinating. But I asked him about Tortorella, because there has been a rumor going around. And, you know, Doug McLean went on Kipper and Bourne last week, and he talked about, he said he heard that Tortorella wanted to leave coaching and go into management in Columbus, and Jarmo Kekalainen didn't want any part of that. But if you'll remember last week on this pod, I mentioned that too, the rumor that, you know, maybe Tortorella didn't want to coach anymore. And I asked Jones about it, and I'm going to write about it, but he said, quote, that is not even something that has entered any conversation. He's the coach and really good at it. And he also said that he thinks Tortorella has played a major role in being where they are, which is true. So, you know, I wanted to mention that. I am going to write about it, but I wanted to mention it. And I also should mention that, you know, Tortorella's had an interesting week. First of all, he walked it back on Felix Sandstrom. He apologized for the way he reacted to a question about it. But also, Tortorella pointed out, and I, you know, when we talked about Tortorella not talking to the media, one of the things I said was, I always wonder if there's a reason here that we don't know about. And he came out on Thursday morning and he said, look, in some of these recent cases, I had some family that I hadn't seen in a while, basically, and I wanted to see them. And, you know, I think internally the organization understood, and there he was. He said, it's not going to be an issue anymore. And there he was after the game. So that's a couple things. Like, obviously they're focused on the playoffs now. I think they're going to be okay, Jeff. I think they're going to be all right. But I just thought some interesting things that Jones had to say about not being afraid of the noise. It's like the old shock jock line. I'd rather they hate me than ignore me. And also just saying, like, the idea that Tortorella is not going to be the coach. He said it's something that has not entered any conversation.
Two quotes. I believe Oscar Wilde was his first one. The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
And you're really pulling out the Oscar Wilde quotes this month, right?
I think that was Oscar Wilde. I'm not 100% sure, but I am sure about this one. And it is one of my favorite quotes from Fred Shiro. When Dave Schultz,
dogs don't bark at park cars.
No, but you like that one too.
Well, you just said that a few times before.
Yeah, that's a pet of mine. Pardon the pun. Fred Shiro, when Dave Schultz came into his office complaining about coverage he was getting in the hockey news, and Shiro said, well, you want to make it all go away? And Dave said, yeah. And Fred said, okay, the answer is easy. Say nothing, do nothing, be nothing. Now get out of my office. That is such a Fred Shiro Philadelphia Flyers thing to say. And I will use this opportunity, by the way, if you want to learn more about, you know, Elliot mentioned Ed Snyder there a couple of seconds ago, the former owner, the late owner of the Philadelphia Flyers. One of the best hockey books I've read recently is Alan Bass's book, Ed Snyder, The Last Sports Mogul.
Oh,
it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And he was, like, to your point, Elliot, he was all about, we are the Flyers. We are out in front. We don't care what people are saying about us as long as they're talking about us. That guy understood it. That guy got it. And that is completely Philadelphia Flyers. Now, the Buffalo Sabres, on the other hand.
Yep.
Tough one on Wednesday night. They lose to the Ottawa Senators. 6-2 is the final. The first period was an ugly, ugly story.
Yep.
And it did seem like it was a team that just came back from a long road trip and had quit. That's what that first period looked like. And they got booed off the ice by the fans who were in attendance. What do you think of Buffalo right now, Elliot? It's tough there.
You know, I have to say that I got one really sarcastic Sabres fan that I'm friendly with. You know, so they got, as you said, they got booed off the ice. And I can't fault the Sabres fans for that. In that particular case, you come back from a road trip, you're down 5-0 after one, you should get booed off the ice. Like that, like, I know there's been a big debate about should the Sabres fans do that. You cannot fault any Sabres fan for that. You know, it's Gord Stellick's old line, Jeff, if you're going to stink on the road. And that was a night where, like, I love the Sabres fans, great fan base, blue collar town. You pay your money, you see that, you're entitled. And one Sabres fan, I know he sent me a note because Alex Tuck talked about how he disagreed with it on the podcast. He said, Tuck's going to be asking to come on your podcast again. I said, I got news for you. That guy talked to me long enough. He's never going to want to talk to me for 7 years. But you can't blame the fans for that one. It was a low moment for the Sabres. I heard internally it was a really hard night. Like, that's one of those nights where you leave, and whether you're a player, you're a coach, or you're an executive, you know that was really bad. And those kind of nights are when, you know, if you don't recover from that. Like, first of all, one manager told me, like, that's the kind of night where if you're the manager, you're going into your dressing room the next day you can, whether it's the next practice or before the next game. That's one of those conversations where the manager has to go in there and say, that is not acceptable. And you also have to make it very clear, and I think everybody knows this, that if it, like, look, the Sabres aren't going to make the playoffs. You know, we're playing out the season, but that's one of those where you look at and you start looking around and you say, if it doesn't get better, even in the final 10 games after everything that's happened, changes get made because of games like that. You know, like I'll tell you, someone was watching the other night, a guy I know who works for a West Coast team, and he was watching Montreal 4-0 over Seattle. And he sent me the same text. He said, he's like, these are games that lead to changes. Now, Seattle has come back since that game. But basically what he was saying, that if you continue to go on that slide, that's where people get traded in the long run or people lose jobs. And I think in Buffalo, a game like that one, if it doesn't get, if you're not better at home and fast, and I mean fast, and they've got a big one on Saturday night. Like, Jeff, you know, we're both Southern Ontario guys. Toronto could be 75-0 and Buffalo could be 0-75 and the Sabres could beat them 9-1 at home. Like, we've seen lots of those games. Lots of those games.
That goes back to the Don Edwards, Bob Sauvé
days. Yes.
That has been the story of these two teams almost since the Sabres' inception of 1970. You're 100% right.
Yeah, so, you know, so it doesn't matter how bad the Sabres might be or how good the Leafs might be. Buffalo is a chamber of horrors for them. But if you're the Sabres, and especially because it's the Leafs and their fans, they hate the Leafs for the most part, except they all make the money back on their season ticket packages by selling those games to the Leaf fans.
That's funny, because I got a note after the
what, want to buy my tickets?
Senators. No, it was, how many Buffalo Sabres fans are selling their tickets immediately after their game for Saturday?
I hope the Sabres fans don't get mad at me for this, but we know they all do it anyway. Like, that is a story that's old as time. But it would be one of those games where there would be, you know, 150 penalty minutes on the ice and 150 fights in the stands. Like, that's what those games were like. But that game against Toronto on Saturday night, those Sabres players, they know. They, after that game on Wednesday, that game on Saturday night, it has to be like game seven. In the eyes of their fans, they got to play that like it's game seven of the Stanley Cup final.
The problem is there's a game in between tonight against the New Jersey Devils.
Doesn't matter.
Like, I know, I know what you're saying about Saturday night, and I get it. It's Hockey Night in Canada. It's a big stage, etc. But do they not have to have a really good showing against the New Jersey Devils on Friday?
Yeah, of course,
you get to Saturday.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. I'm jumping a bit ahead of things. You're totally right. I can't argue. But You know, Jeff, let me have my narrative, okay? Don't interfere with my narratives.
Okay.
That is narrative interference. It's a two-minute minor and a gross misconduct.
I should know better. That's that's your, as Alfred Hitchcock would say, the frozen chicken dinner. Leave something a little bit wrong in the script that leaves people to think about it all the way home until they get home to open their fridge and have their frozen chicken dinner, something along those lines.
Yeah.
I understand from an Alfred Hitchcock point of view.
Yeah.
Okay. Elsewhere, you mentioned the Toronto Maple Leafs. So they beat the Washington Capitals. I don't know what the bigger story here is. The Maple Leafs win, or considering the Tampa Bay Lightning are chasing Toronto right now, the Toronto Maple Leafs win 5-1, Tyler Bertuzzi with a pair of goals, that the Washington Capitals lost this one. And the Caps, as you know, just like Detroit, just like the Islanders, can't squander any games here.
No, I mean, you can't. It's what have we called this? The turtle derby, the snail's race?
Oh, going backwards into the wild card.
It's very rare that the Capitals get pounded when Lindgren plays in goal. He's been an enormous difference maker for them. But they were really listless in this one. You know, it was a weird night at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. You know, Kane and Zarnik got sick. And what did Detroit get outshot 15-3 in the first period? Like they were never in that game. You know, Washington was never really in that game. Detroit was never really in that game. The Philly game was weird. At one point, there were more goals disallowed than there were goals scored. You know, but I give the Islanders a lot of credit because we've talked about how they've gone down easy. You know, the Islanders had they thought they scored to go up 1-0. It was disallowed, and then Florida went right down the ice and scored. And I was looking at this and I was like, this game might end to 8-0 Panthers. And the Islanders found a way. Like that was like that game for one night, they kind of reminded me about the Islanders of recent vintage that used to scratch and claw and find their way to win. Like that was a game where they had a lot of excuses to lose. That's a night where you go and you play the slots. Like you look around, you say, okay, they lost, and we won in a tough game where people weren't expecting us to win. Let's go play the slots because I might get the three cherries on this one. This is a night where I might get the three sevens or the three cherries. So that was, you know, that was a great, great win for the Islanders. But, you know, and, you know, you talked about the Devils. That's a huge game for the Devils now against the Sabres. Only one game on Friday, and that's a massive, massive game for the Devils. But because they've been given the opportunity there, a big opportunity.
And they're playing well. Like, they've won two games in a row. Timo Meier's cooking. Jake Allen's cooking. Like, this is, like, if you're right. And now the Islanders have jumped over them by a single point and do have a game in hand. Don't have a tiebreaker against anybody, but
yeah,
they're the Islanders.
They got to win outright.
Like, this isn't one that the New Jersey Devils could squander, not by any stretch of the imagination.
Have to have it. I hate saying must win, but it's a must win. So I hate myself again.
Vegas and Winnipeg. I know you're working the Maple Leafs game against the Washington Capitals. I'm not sure how much you had a chance to watch the Vegas Golden Knights and the Winnipeg Jets, but now they have lost five games in a row. Those Winnipeg Jets have Ivan Barbashev with a pair in this one. Logan Thompson, Elliot.
Yes.
Logan Thompson was dynamite.
Yes, he
in
was.
This game, one of Logan Thompson's best performances of the season. And it seemed as if, and I do like to go out of my way to mention Pavel Dorofeev, who I think is going to be an excellent player.
Really good player, like Vegas a Golden find Knights. There by the Golden Knights. Like
yes,
a real find.
Third round draft pick in, I want to say, 2019. But the situation where Haig caught Namestnikov and then Scheifele came in to fight him, it seemed as if a lot changed there. I think in Winnipeg's mind, Haig was going to get, you know, the five in the boot. Instead, he got the minor, and Scheifele ended up with the two, the five, and the 10. And that was it for his night. And it seemed as if everything sort of collapsed on Winnipeg from there. Nonetheless, that was that game. But the bigger story is now, Elliot, the Winnipeg Jets have now lost five games in a row.
Well, you know, first of all, I wanted to talk about that. I wanted to talk about that Scheifele play. because like in live action, Haig was given a major.
You know why they do that.
Yes, but here, like, hey, don't interrupt me. I'm on a roll here.
Okay? Oh, sorry. Okay. You cook.
Like, I know why they do it, and I don't disagree with it.
Same.
I don't disagree with it. Call the major and then take the look. You know, like, for example, one thing, just let me, as you know, I can never tell a story in a straight line. Like, I have to go in 46 different directions.
And they say this country has no poets. Ladies and gentlemen, Elliot Friedman.
I was talking to a GM on Wednesday, and you know, we were talking about some of the added reviews. And he was playing, his team was playing on Tuesday night, so he didn't see the the Edmonton-Winnipeg game where there was the penalty called on the Oilers that was Winnipeg getting themselves, right? The one on Pionk. And I said, go look at it. And he said, and he texted me back and he said, it's a good thing that that is reviewable next year. And so then we started talking again. He called me back and we started talking and he said, you know, I say, do you ever worry that there's going to be too many reviews? And he says, I understand why the league feels that way sometimes at the top. Like Bettman thinks about that a lot. And, you know, and media and fans sometimes think about that. But he says, as a manager, I think our group feels get the call right. Like he's like, you know, Jeff, we joked about that coach saying, hey, I'm there. The NHL, we're stuck here. So you're going to be here too. You know, I think the managers feel a lot of the same way. Just get the call right. So they call Haig for the major. And because Scheifele fights Haig, he gets 2+5+10. But then they review it and Haig gets downgraded. It's no longer a major. It's now a 2-minute penalty, right? Here's the problem I have with that. Not the review. I'm good with that. But if the referees in real time think it's a major, why should Scheifele get instigating? Because he does too. He thinks in the moment that's a major penalty and a foul. At real speed, the referees are calling that a major. So I don't think, like if Scheifele was fighting a clean hit, that's different. But in real time, even the officials think that's a major. So I don't think that Scheifele should be given an instigating and ejected from the game in that moment. Now, right.
But does it matter what happened before the instigator? Like the instigator is the instigator. You started a fight.
But it's he did it because reaction. He thought but no, a player was but delivering that, a dirty hit.
But Elliot, it doesn't matter.
It matters to me. You can't tell me it doesn't matter.
I understand that.
Jeff, no, you cannot interfere with my truth.
Okay.
This is finish my your, truth. Finish.
I'm tell done your now. Truth. You preach.
But you cannot. This is my truth. And you is, cannot okay. cannot say this it doesn't is, mean anything.
This is one of my favorite sports moments. This is when what your head thinks collides with what your heart feels. And I'm with you. Like my heart feels the same thing, but my head says it doesn't matter.
You know, my head says it doesn't matter.
If it's a minor.
Your head is
doesn't
stupid.
Doesn't matter.
Your head is stupid and my head is smart.
You instigated the fight. You started the fight. You get the extra mile. You don't have to like the rule. You don't have to love the rule. That's just the rule. Whether something happened that, you know, in your mind justified you going and starting that fight. The thing about the instigator for me, if you really want to get technical about it, mm-hmm. and if you want to do video review for that hit, okay, and you looked at it initially, and at the end of the hit, you see Haig's, let me do with the body position here, left elbow come up after he goes through the check. And you think to yourself, uh-oh, maybe that was the chicken wing and, uh-oh, that's spicy and that's going to get him the 5. And then you do the review and you see, okay, no, the shoulder is tucked in. It's just a really unfortunate play. Is it worthy of a penalty? Yes, 2 minutes, not a 5. If you really want to review something, Scheifele and Haig drop their gloves at the same time. Scheifele confronts Haig. That's true. but the gloves come off at the same time. Should there have been an instigator on? If you want to play, you know what's interesting about that?
I have to say, you're not wrong about that in the sense that people have said that to me before. That if Shifley comes in where Haig can't defend himself, or Shifley's got the gloves off and Haig is clearly taking off his gloves because Shifley's are already off,
yeah,
that's an instigator. I have to tell you, Jeff, there are people who agree with you on that. If the gloves go off at the same time, it shouldn't be
an instigator. It's not an instigator. You know, it's not.
You know, I have to tell you, there are people out there who agree with you on this. My point is that I don't believe Shifley should get ejected from the game if at real speed, even the officials think it's a dirty play.
Okay, because, we're not going to go anywhere
because
with that one.
Because you know what, Jeff? Like, that fight is happening because Shifley thinks that Haig has made a dirty play, and in real time, the officials agree with him. They agree. You're right. You're right. That's a dirty play. Why should Shifley get thrown out of a game in that situation? When they look at it and they say, I mean, you could even argue, because it's still a minor, that it is a penalty. But point is, if you think in the moment that play is worthy of a major, I don't think Shifley should be ejected. I don't. I don't think any player should be ejected in that situation. As a matter of fact, maybe what I'm just saying is if a player takes a major penalty, whoever fights him shouldn't get an instigator. Because you're standing up for a guy who got fouled in a major way.
I understand that. I just don't think from an official's point of view, they'll say that anything is going to justify you starting a fight, no matter what just happened.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know. I got to tell you something. If someone jumped you on the street, I'd keep walking. I totally admit that.
It's just an old school way of thinking. That, you know, okay, someone high-sticked my buddy and I went and jumped him and punched him out. He's really the instigator, not me. He instigated the fight. He made me do this. No, it's still a choice that you make.
Yeah, but you know what? I don't want to penalize a choice. Okay, we're talking in circles. I think I've made my point very clear. If in the moment the referees think it's a 5-minute major, Shifley shouldn't get
no instigator for that. Fill your boots, whatever you want at that point.
Fill your boots.
All right. We made a mistake. We thought it was a 5, so go for it. Do whatever you need to do. You're not going to get an instigator.
Well, exactly. I do think that. Teammates are supposed to stand up for each other, right? They are supposed to stand up for each other.
It's just such a super old school way to think about it.
I'll tell you who agrees with me. When this podcast drops, you know where I'm going to be right and you're going to be wrong. In the province of Manitoba.
Oh, yes, I know that is true. I know that is true.
Merrick hates Manitoba. Listen. He hates it. He has told me before it should be cut out of Canada with an X-Acto knife.
No, leave Thompson. I got a lot of friends in Thompson. Actually, I got a lot of friends in Winnipeg, too. Leave parts
of
Winnipeg.
No, you think you have friends in Winnipeg. That's over.
Not after today's pod. I like Mark Shifley, though. No, how about that?
He doesn't like you anymore because you want him thrown out of that game.
Okay. What do you make of the 5-game? Whoa, geez, 5-game skid for the Jets.
Well, I was going to get to that. I mean, first of all, I mean, you know, St. Louis won, and Calgary was also really mad about a whistle, but you know, St. Louis won. I give the Knights a lot of credit this week. A lot of credit. They had a huge game against St. Louis. They were down their number one goalie. They're down their number one defenseman. They won it. And that was a hard game. Logan Thompson, a huge penalty shot save. And then they win it at the other end of the ice, basically right after. You know, they blew the 1 point. In Nashville, they should have won that game. They lost, but they still got another point. And then they win that game in Winnipeg, a really tough place to play. So they get 5 out of a possible 6 points when they're shorthanded. And you know, too, like, if St. Louis wins that game, you know, like, the pressure ratchets up on the Golden Knights. And You should never question the heart of a team that just won a championship and is the defending champions. But I think if anyone doubted what the Golden Knights were capable of and how much was still left there, they showed that this week. Very impressive. week for them. You know, as for the Jets and the way they've played, it was basically a 2-1 game, right? Like there were two empty net goals. It was a 2-1 game. It was a hard game. I don't really know what to say there, except that I don't look at that as like it's a bad loss because they've lost five in a row. But I saw a team that played really hard against another good team and could have won that game. Like there have been some games in this stretch where they've like the Washington game last Sunday, where I simply have said they've been good enough to win and they haven't won. Like, do you disagree with me? Like, I thought they were
no,
right there.
And you know, here's the thing. That's usually the indication. Again, this is like an old school way to think, but I've always believed this too. That's an indication that you're coming out of a slump. When you lose games, you should have won.
Yeah.
And conversely, when you win games, you should have lost. Then that sometimes means that you're heading into one, right? Remember we talked to McDavid and Dreisaitl around All-Star, and we mentioned, you know, some of the games that during their streak, they probably should have lost.
Yeah.
But just, you know, surfed on skill and won, and they kind of said like, oh yeah, those things happen. I've always, you know, subscribed to that theory that you're going into a slump. When you win games, you should lose.
Yes.
And you're coming out of one, and when you lose games, you should win. That's how I feel about the Jets.
Yeah, like that game last night, they lost, but that wasn't a 4-1 game. That was a 2-1 game.
Meanwhile, the Nashville Predators' streak is over at 18 games. It comes crumbling down at the hands of the Arizona Coyotes, who double them up 8-4, Elliot, at Mullet Arena. Hang on. Josh Doan and the Arizona Coyotes take care of the Nashville Predators. Just thought I'd slide that in there, Scottsdale kid and all.
I mean, it was due to happen, right?
I just didn't think anyone expected it was going to be against Arizona Coyotes, especially when Jason Zucker scored two quickies to make it 2-0.
Yeah, classic trap game, I guess. Right in between a couple of major opponents. Look, when they scored to make it 7-4 with 3:20 left, was I the only one who thought they were going to score three more to tie it just because of what happened against Vegas the other night? I guess they were due. Incredible streak. Great streak. And the Jets can breathe a little easier because they're still 4 points back of them. But what a run. What a run for Nashville. And all good things must come to an end.
What aren't they allowed to do now that they've been beaten 8-4?
So you're suggesting that Brunette finds something to cancel another leisure activity?
9-2 against Dallas.
Or Barry Trotz and Brunette.
Concerts. Yes. 8-4 against the Arizona Coyotes. What do they take away now? What do the principals take away from their students?
Oh, you thought you were going to see your kids tomorrow? No, that's not happening.
Tomorrow you're skating. Not a single puck hits the ice. See you at 8 a.m., gentlemen.
That would be hilarious. I'm sorry. You thought you were going to see your children? That's over.
Florida Panthers. You mentioned the Islanders a couple of moments ago, and that's a huge win for the Islanders. They're now at 77 points, etc. We have an all-timer from Paul Maurice. Today is free quote effing day. Take whatever you think I might say and use it. I won't bitch about it. Paul Maurice with an all-time quote after the Florida Panthers loss against the New York Islanders. And that covers some ground because Paul's given out some great quotes over the years. But today is free quote effing day. Take whatever you think I might say and use it.
First of all, poets. I have to say that I would take Paul Maurice up on that. If I was a media reporter for the Florida Panthers, I would say
George Richards
or Colby Guy or David Dwork. It's harder for a guy like Jameson because it's NHL.com. And while I think they have really tried to work to give those guys more autonomy, it's still under the NHL umbrella. So it's harder for him to make up Paul Maurice quotes and get away with it. But if I was one of the other reporters there that do a really nice job of covering the team, I would be making up these quotes. I would say, you know, the Florida Panthers lost to the New York Islanders on Thursday. And my first quote would be, I thought we absolutely stunk and I hate every single one of my players. And I would just put that in the quote. And then the next day, I would just be curious to see what the reaction would be.
Here's a list of the players I believe to be overpaid.
That's right. Remember when I said that Sam Reinhardt had a bad attitude the other day and you guys thought I was kidding? I really meant it.
Oh, that'd be awesome. An all-timer from Paul Maurice.
I saw Randy Moeller and Ed Jovanovski on our broadcast, and I said, I'm going to dress those guys on Saturday because they're better than anyone else that I have. I would just be going with it and just...
I look at our team and I say, this is a squad that wouldn't check their hats. That's why we're bringing Jeff Chychrun out of retirement, Ed Jovanovski as well, Randy Moeller to Elliot's point. Expect them in the lineup this weekend, end of conference.
And then I'd say, heck... Steve Goldstein and Doug Plagans may play too.
Oh, that'd be a lot of fun. Thank you, Paul, for the all-time.
You know, I was having a conversation with someone about that. They said, do you think that that's going to lead to any discipline or any fine or anything like that? And I said, I hope not. Now, Maurice, I think Maurice has been kind of warned about some of his language before, but I'm like, that is so harmless. That is so harmless. It's funny. You know, for example, like, did you see what happened in the NBA on Wednesday night? You know, Kelly Oubre, he got upset at the end of the 76ers Clipper game and he went at the referees. And, you know, I'm not going to repeat what he said to them, but, you know, because I sometimes wonder what the Rogers rules are about this stuff. But people can go find it. And he apologized the next day and people were laughing about it all over social media. Like, to me, we shouldn't be taking this stuff seriously. We should be laughing at it and writing made up stories. So I hope that that doesn't go anywhere. You know, the other thing I wanted to mention was there was a great game between the Rangers and the Avalanche, which the Rangers won in a
shootout.
And, you know, there's this. So Nathan MacKinnon, who has had a phenomenal season, and as we sit here recording this podcast, he would be number one on my hard ballot right now. His streak of home games with a point was snapped at 35, just shy of the NHL record. Now, I didn't realize this, but post-game, some of the reporters who cover the Avalanche had quotes from like Devon Taves saying, I thought he got an assist on my goal. And a few of them reported that the Avalanche have asked the league to look at it. And I don't know where this will go, but it brought back some old memories of when I used to do baseball, Jeff. And so it was early in my career and I was working for the Fan and like I was doing a lot of baseball reporting and my job was to just get quotes after the games. I wasn't on air as much as I was just there to get quotes. And, you know, I saw for the first time, there was a time I used to sit behind the official scorer and there were a few of them. There was one guy, Neil McCarl. There was another guy, Doug Hobbs. And I remember there was one time where, and I think I'm getting this story right. I may get the names wrong, but I remember the play. Manny Ramirez was still playing for Cleveland, and he had a chance to hit for the cycle in Toronto. And he hit a deep fly ball to right field, and Sean Green was playing right field. And he caught it. But then he slammed into the fence. And I think at that time, there were parts of it that were chain link. So it hurts. And he dropped the ball. And I'm pretty sure it was Doug Hobbs that day. And he called it an error. And later in the game, you know, Ramirez, and he ended up on third. They called it a three-base error. and he hit a home run in the game, and I think he got a single. Like, basically, he had a chance to get
the cycle.
He either had the cycle minus the error, or he could get the cycle. And Mike Hargrove was the manager of Cleveland at the time, and he called up the scorekeeper, and I was right there. I saw it. And, like, I could hear Doug Hobbs' end of the conversation, and he was like, no, I'm not changing it. And Mike Hargrove was saying, my player can get the cycle. That was a tough play. You should change that to a triple. And it was the first time I really saw this, and it used to happen in baseball all the time. Then I realized it was one of those things. Like, I saw Robbie Alomar go berserk after a game once because he... like, there was a ground ball up the middle. He made an incredible play to get to it, and he dropped it. And the player reached first base, and it was E4. They called him for an error. And in the post game, like, Alomar went wild. He complained to the reporters. He said, it's terrible I get an error on that play. I'm the only second baseman in baseball who can even get to that. And it's terrible I get an error. I remember asking some of the more senior people that covered baseball. I said, because I think these happen in a really short span of each other. And I was like, how often does this happen? And they go, all the time. Like, you would not believe how often they pressure scorekeepers to change their calls. And so I'm curious to see if McKinnon gets the point for this. But I thought it was interesting how, like, you know him, like, he doesn't care. He just wants to win the Stanley Cup. He doesn't care about anything else. But I am curious to see if the NHL does review it and consider changing it at all.
You want a little historical perspective on assists?
Sure.
You want a quick story?
Sure.
So this gives you a little peek into how exciting my life is.
Okay.
If you ever get a chance, either go to the Hockey Hall of Fame, or if you can reserve time to do any research at the Hall of Fame Resource Center in the west end of the city, go look at old game sheets between, like, 1917
crossed out and stuff like that.
1921. No, you know what's fascinating about it? And I didn't realize this, and this was only, like, it would have been like around 2005. I was at the Hall of Fame Resource Center. I can't even remember what I was researching, but I booked a number of hours to go through a few things. And I was looking at old game sheets. And on a lot of the old game sheets, this is before, you know, assists were consistently awarded. All the scorekeepers were encouraged to award assists. And as someone at the Resource Center explained to me, because I asked, I said, like, what's this note on the game sheet all about? And it occurred on a number of game sheets. Like, can you please make sure for as many goals as possible, you award, I can't remember, however many number of assists. At one point, it was each goal had a potential for 3 assists. And I asked about it. And this person at the Resource Center said to me, well, in all honesty, it's more a piece of marketing than anything else. The NHL, you know, the more numbers you have beside players' names, it makes them look better. You know, if you have, like, you know, 2 goals, okay, well, that's fine. You know, Joe Smith has 2 goals. But if Joe Smith has 2 goals and 18 assists, then you put a 20 beside that person's name, and all of a sudden, they look like wonderful hockey players. It was a piece of marketing. It was a way to make their players look like they're doing something more substantial on the ice. And I would make the argument even more so that in the age of analytics, because there was a hue and cry around, you know, what is an assist? Like, all we need to know is who scored the goal. That's the person who's doing the work. I would make the argument that the first sort of analytic was assists, because there was a time when people looked at that and said, that stat is nonsense, and that stat tells us nothing. All we need to know is who scored the goal. But interesting, originally, Elliot, assists were there for marketing purposes.
Interesting. They still are, I would like to argue.
I think a lot of things are done for marketing reasons, but nonetheless, and assists were one of the originals.
So basically, we'll just say that Connor McDavid is going to be the 4th player ever to have 100 marketing opportunities in one season.
Yes, exactly.
And before we wrap it up, you mentioned his name briefly. We should mention Josh Stone. First Arizona player ever to have 2 goals in their debut. And I think the third player in franchise history going back to Winnipeg and Dale Hawerchuk to have 4 points in their first three games. Shane Doan only, I think, 4 points in his first two games. Shane Doan, I think, only had three, which relegates him to the second best player in family history. But, you know, the Coyotes did a real nice job with this. The lap, they did a great video of the GM, Bill Armstrong, making the call to Doan that he was going to play. Like, look, this has been a hard time for the Coyotes. I was actually talking about this with someone on Thursday. You know, you look at Matthews, 59 goals. You look at Knies in Toronto. He's going to be a hell of a player for them. And now you look at Doan. He was saying to me, it just shows you why Bettman fights with every last breath for Arizona, because this market, like, it's never been the fans' fault and it's never been the players' fault, because they are, like, if you take a look at, like, there's former players like Derek Morris, Dallas Drake, I think, is a coach down there now. Like, there are good former players who are coaching these kids now, and they're turning out players. Like, they said that the fault of that organization has always been location. And he said to me, like, Josh Doan is another example of a homegrown Arizona kid that has a chance to make a difference. Like, nobody's like Matthews. Matthews is, you know, a different breed. But you look at Knies, you look at Doan, just another example of, like, they are turning out players. And he said to me, and this is a guy who works in the league, he says, this is why they should find a way to make it work, because from a hockey development point of view, you have to like what's coming out of there, and it's not the players and the fans' fault that this hasn't worked.
And furthermore, let me add one more layer to that too. If it could ever sort itself out properly with a proper arena,
yes,
that is easily acceptable, that is easily accessible.
Well, acceptable
to fans,
works too, I have to say. And, like, that actually works there.
Acceptable and accessible to fans, that it would be, considering all the benefits you get, not just from playing there, but all the benefits outside of hockey as well. That should be a destination for hockey players.
Yeah. Oh, and that's the other thing he said to me, is that's the other thing the league knows. Like, it's looking at, everybody wants to play in Vegas. Everybody wants to play in Florida. If they sorted that out, there would be a ton of players that wanted to play in Arizona. That you are totally, totally right about this. And also, don't look now, but the Dallas Stars are taking their run at number one in the NHL, 101 points, right behind the first team to clinch a playoff berth in the NHL this year, the New York Rangers. And Shesterkin was out of his mind in Colorado
Colorado could have gone through their entire roster, and Jared Bednar could have taken a shot. They could have signed Merrick Malik to a one-day contract to let him shoot. Nobody, Elliot, was beating Shesterkin in that shootout. Nobody. He was phenomenal. And by the way, to the Dallas Stars, they clinch. So teams that have clinched already, you mentioned the Rangers with all the Dallas Stars into that mix as well. They clinched on Thursday, as did the Carolina Hurricanes, the Florida Panthers, and even though they were idle, the Boston Bruins.
I think actually in that game, the Avalanche should have sent two players.
Oh, I see what you mean. You know what they should have done? They should have dressed Joe Sakic for one game. You want to talk about a guy that's great on penalty shots?
That's a good point.
That's the guy they should have had in 1998 shoot, but he was injured. That's what sunk Canada, not Gretzky sitting on the bench. Ooh, hot take time. All right, Montana's Thought Line is next. Listen to the 32 Thoughts podcast ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
Thank you.
You know, one of the things the solar eclipse, remember that, reminded us is people will travel to have unique experiences, see things, and be part of events. We all saw how people congregated in areas that had the best view, the best safe view. And they all had to stay somewhere, and many used Airbnb. I want to share something with you I was once told. One of the wisest things you can do when you host an Airbnb is find events in your area and let people in that community know that your place is available for out-of-towners. Many did this with the eclipse. You can do this as well. Your home could be an Airbnb. Seriously. It doesn't have to be your whole place. I mean, it could be. You'd be surprised what people are looking for when they travel. It's simple and it's really, really smart. You might want to think about it. You could be sitting on a whole new revenue stream. Concerts, sporting events, conferences. People are always on the move. Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.ca/host.
Okay, time now once again for the Montana's Thought Line. Montana's Barbecue and Bar, Elliot, Canada's home for barbecue. You do love the squealing guitar. Thank you, Rick Turner, 32thoughts at sportsnet.ca.
Jeff, this will never not be funny to me. Never.
And we thank Rick Turner for all that. Thank you. 32thoughts at sportsnet.ca. 1-833-311-3232. We begin this edition of the Montana's Thought Line once again by a little bit of cleanup, a little bit of janitorial work, Elliot. To our Gaston Gingras conversation last week, we read out an email from Matt. I had the audacity to question the authenticity of his claim about his son stopping a Gaston Gingras shot with his mask, which broke the puck, to which Matt follows up with this one. Hey again, while I do find time to listen to your podcast, I don't have so much free time that I can make up Gaston Gingras stories. In case the story seems suspect, I've attached a picture of Carter, that's his son, proudly holding the damaged puck.
They're
signed
now providing evidence because you doubted them.
Yes, I know. How dare I? Have a great day. Thanks for the pod. And yes, he sent along a picture of Carter with the autographed puck from Gaston Gingras. One final Gaston Gingras email.
People
here.
People are
Vermont.
Now providing yes. evidence when we doubt need- it.
Yeah, if you claim that Gaston Gingras broke your hand with a slap shot, we want the x-rays. And I want the x-rays autographed by Gaston Gingras. Send them along, please.
I did get one great tweet from a Mike Bauman who said, the Titanic wasn't sunk by an iceberg. It took a slap shot to the hull from Gaston Gingras.
I like that. Cal in Vermont sends this.
Excellent.
One time in Montreal, I heard there was a bank heist with many people inside. While waiting for police to show up, Gaston Gingras was walking home from practice and noticed the commotion. Gingras grabbed a can of soda out of the trash and took a rocket of a shot that broke through the bank's front glass and caught the robber between the eyes, knocking him out until the Mounties. Oh, nice touch. The Mounties showed up. True story. Submits Cal in Vermont. Always appreciate the exaggeration about the slap shot of Gaston Gingras. All right, to more serious things, Elliot.
I don't know where this is going, but I'm looking forward to the ride.
Yes, more Gaston Gingras stories. Thank you. Blake, greetings, Jeff, Elliot, and Dom. Longtime listener from Stratford, Ontario, and graduate of Jeff's favorite school, Western University.
Yes.
I was at the on Stratford. God bless the William Allman Arena. I would like to build off the submission to the last pod regarding Wayne Simmonds and the one-day contract. Mm-hmm. Is there any provision in the CBA forbidding a player from receiving compensation on a one-day contract? Could a team, say Tampa with Stamkos, offer a discounted contract extension with the understanding Stamkos will receive a one-day contract at the end of his career with a significant signing bonus, Elliot Friedman?
One-day contracts are ceremonial, so the answer to the question is no. It's a great question, but the answer is no. They are purely ceremonial. They don't go onto the cap. I mean, look, if you want to funnel money to Stamkos or Simmonds for whatever reason, I'm sure they will gladly accept it. But it's not a cap thing. It's purely honorary and ceremonial.
This one's a lot of fun. A little bit of historical knowledge for everybody here. Jason from Campbell River, home of the Rod Brind'Amour Arena. Hey, Jeff, Elliot, and Dom. I was watching a video by The Hockey Guy on YouTube today, and he cracked a joke about Patrick Roy being fed up with his goaltending and going in net to do it himself. Man, could we ever see Patrick doing that or what? This got me thinking. With Hall of Fame goalies working in managerial and coaching positions all over the league, is there anything from stopping team executives from serving as the e-bug in a game? Has a situation like this ever happened? As a grizzled Canucks fan, nothing would bring me more joy than a 44-year-old Luongo storming down the tunnel, WWE style, to defend his Panthers. Thanks for the thoughts and the awesome pod. That one
from Jason
Campbell
River. You know where I thought he was going with that?
Was that?
As a Canucks fan, I thought he was going to say 75-year-old Jim Rutherford appearing in the playoffs.
Or John Garrett coming out of the broadcast booth to don the pads. There's any number of choices you can make there, Elliot.
Yes, yes, there are. The Canucks could have a very interesting playoff if all of this falls into place, or even one of these fall into place.
Once upon a time, you can make the argument that the original
Well, you're going to talk
e-bug,
about the most famous one.
Well, and that's the original e-bug, as I like to call him, Lester Patrick.
Yes.
So this is 1928, and it is the Rangers and the Montreal Maroons Stanley Cup Final at the Montreal Forum. Lawrence Chabot was the goaltender for the Rangers, got hit with a Nils Stewart backhand, caught him in the left eye. He races to the hospital, obviously. So the Rangers asked to use a number of other goaltenders who were there. Alex Connell, Ottawa Senators netminder at the time, was there, but the Maroons disagreed and wouldn't allow the Rangers
yes,
to
I remember
do
that
it.
Was a big part of it.
Big part of it. So Lester Patrick, at 44, coach and general manager of the Rangers, went in. He faced 19 shots. He only allowed one goal. Frank Boucher scored in overtime. The Rangers won. They went on to win the series and the Stanley Cup, their first Stanley Cup victory ever from the legend, along with his brother Frank, the man that we are all indebted to for a number of rules changes that his old Pacific Hockey League ushered into existence that still exists to this day. I think it's like 30 rules that still exist to this day from his old PCHL. Nonetheless, Lester Patrick Elliott, the original e-bug. Would there be anything, though, stopping, I don't know, Marty Brodeur, Roberto Luongo from donning the pads and saying, I will be the e-bug tonight?
Well, the e-bug has to be set in advance, right?
Boo. Boo.
It would be pretty funny if, you know, if Vancouver knew that they were locked in, Jim Rutherford submitted himself as the e-bug for a game at the end of this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the e-bug tonight.
Yeah, I'll be the e-bug. I'm Jim Rutherford. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, John Garrett.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a hot dog. I'm going to have some ketchup. And my goaltending equipment, I'm going to play.
You know that happened to him in Quebec. Do you ever hear that
yes,
story?
Yes, you
Quebec
told
Nordiques?
That story. Yes, you did talk about that. Yes.
He was backing up and he was eating a hot dog and he stuffed it in his goalie pads when he got ushered into duty. And during a fray in front of the net, the hot dog popped out. Attaboy, Cheech. Thanks for the question. Adam, gentlemen, the question from the last podcast concerning how the salary cap is calculated raised another question for me. What mechanisms are in place to make the players whole, given that teams are not obligated to spend to the cap? For argument's sake, and to keep the math easy, if 10 teams spent only to $10 million below the cap ceiling, how would that $100 million not paid out in salaries be made up to the players?
That's actually a good question. The way it is that if everybody's well below the cap, then, you know, basically it comes down to revenues, right? Like, that's just the best way to put it. It comes down to revenues. It's not so much about cap spending. It comes down to revenue spending. The revenues are split. It's 50-50, but there are some costs that get taken out, but it's 50-50 and the players are supposed to get half and the league is supposed to get half. And the reason there is an escrow is to protect against one side getting too much and then you have to go back and collect. That way you can distribute it at the end based on what the actual numbers are. So if all of these teams are spending well under the cap, but the revenues are high, the players are going to get more. It's going to be that simple. that's like, there have been situations before, and I will say this, one of the issues early in the cap, I can't remember how many years in it was, but there was one year when a lot of players were going into LTI. I can't remember which year it was, but I wrote about it, or I've talked about it before, where the costs were very high in terms of salaries, and the more players were getting injured, like basically, even if it was not a lot of money, but it just, it kept on driving the costs up. And the players were like, I mean, one player said to me, he joked, he says he didn't know a lot about the mechanism, but he said, I know that the more players play at this point in time, it's worse for us. Yes. So I don't, it doesn't really come down to as much about, it all depends on the revenues and their relation to the costs. So if the revenues are good and costs are down, that's better for the players. It gets made up by either getting money back or having less taken out at the end of the year. That's the safest way to explain it.
Jack in Kenora has a rules question, Elliot. You'll like this one. Mm-hmm. Following up on Tobias's question, this is from last podcast, on a player not leaving the box when his time is served, and mm-hmm. we used Michael Pekka as the example. Jack submits, I played midget AA, and on occasion, when playing from behind, when taking a face-off in our defensive zone, our team would withhold one player on the bench. So I guess his team would have four skaters, and the team in the offensive position would have five. Upon puck drop, we would have our fifth player jump over the boards in hopes of a quick face-off win and chip up for a breakaway. Worked on a few occasions. However, the opponent's team would be up in arms. Is playing unnecessarily short a legal play in the NHL? It was fun to try, but never penalized when refs noticed. Good work, Elliot and Dom. Oh, how dare you, Jack?
Jack, I really like you, and I like Kenora even more for that.
You know what the answer is, Elliot?
I do not.
The answer is you cannot do that.
I kind of figured.
Specifically in the defensive zone, you have to put the proper amount of players on the ice, or the referee has a discretion to call a bench minor. Now, the one thing that I do wonder about is if it was the offensive team in that zone, if you're in the offensive zone and you choose to put out four instead of five, considering you wouldn't have the advantage of jumping behind the defenders for a breakaway, I wonder if the official would just say, you want to play shorthanded? Go for it. There's no advantage to be gleaned there. But from the defensive side of things, in the defensive zone, if you don't put the requisite amount of players out, then you can be assessed a bench minor.
You know, I didn't know that. It made sense about that because you often see, you know, if there's some sort of commotion or issue on a face-off, the referees will go over to the bench and say, what are you doing here? Or get us a player out here. I do remember playing minor hockey back in house league. You got really shamed if you forgot to go out on the ice when you were supposed to. Because, you know, when I started, it was the buzzer, right?
Yes,
and if you weren't ready to go out there when the buzzer went, either your coach yelled at you or the official did. Like, I remember there was one time I forgot and I got embarrassed in front of my teammates. So that only happened to me once.
We'll end up on this one. Jesper, the Danish goalie. Okay? Jesper, the Danish goalie. Hey, Jeff, Elliot.
Is this Frederik Andersen's burner account?
It might be. Hey, Jeff, Elliot, and the Sound Dominator. Wow. The Sound
Dominator.
Yes. Jesper from Denmark. Or is it Jesper? Longtime listener of the pod. And as a hockey geek, I love when Jeff gets historical. Oh, my. I just listened to your pod, and the question about Jeff Skinner got me thinking about which player. Now, the Skinner question is, he's close to 1,000 games here, folks. He's never played in a playoff game. That's the context. Mm-hmm. So the question about Jeff Skinner got me thinking about which player has the most postseason games without winning a Stanley Cup. Let's go, cool. Ducks. Jesper, the Danish goaltender, adds, this will be the last one. So do you have a stab at this one?
Okay, I'm thinking. This is that's first, a great
first time's always the worst.
Yeah, I know. I know guys who played a lot of games, but they won, like Chelios, Scott Stevens, Larry Robinson.
They all won cups, yo.
Yeah. You know what? Like, I'll tell you this. You know who the two guys who jump into my head are?
Who?
I don't know if it's the right answer, but the two guys who jump into my head are Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau.
Reverse order, but you got it right.
Is it Marleau 1, Thornton 2?
Correct. You got it. Patrick
really?
Marleau, good for you. Marleau 195.
I am retiring from trivia.
Joe Thornton,
I'm going out on top.
Here's the other one. Here's an interesting one. You know who comes in at number 3? I never would have got this.
Okay. Give me a clue. Don't tell me. Give me a clue.
Oh, jeez.
I'm glad Thornton and Marleau won gold medals. At least that's something. Like, you don't have to deal with that. Yes.
Okay, so your clue is this player and his brother are still significant names in hockey.
Is it Dale Hunter?
It's Dale Hunter. Jeez, good for you.
Retire again. I came out of retirement, and now I'm back into retirement.
Holy smokes, Freach. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, Dale Hunter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or as they used to announce at Montreal Forum.
Feel
Dale
good right
Hunter.
Now.
Yeah, love him. Love him. Patrick Marleau, number 1. Joe Thornton, number 2. Dale Hunter, number 3. You know what, Elliot?
That was a good hint. I wouldn't have gotten it without that hint.
Take the rest of the week off. You nailed the top 3. Good job. All right, fine. Never mind when Merrick goes historical on you. How about Friedman? Well done. Try the ribs. The Montana's Thought Line. Montana's Barbecue and Bar.
The ribs.
It's catchy, eh? Top tunes. Canada's home for barbecue. 32 thoughts at sportsnet.ca. 1-833-311-3232. The ways to get in. Wrapping up the pod tomorrow. Ah, Elliot, yet another start to another week. Now, other than the 32 Thoughts podcast, there's not much else really to look forward to.
Jeff, you are forgetting about Montana's Daily Deals. Their chicken wings are double dusted in-house, cooked to a golden crispy finish, and they're half price on Mondays.
Half price?
Half price every Monday and sauced however you like them.
Well then, head on down to Montana's Barbecue and Bar for half price wings every Monday. The only other thing exciting about Mondays. Some conditions apply. Visit montanas.ca for details.
You know, one of the things the solar eclipse, remember that, reminded us is people will travel to have unique experiences, see things, and be part of events. We all saw how people congregated in areas that had the best view, the best safe view. And they all had to stay somewhere, and many used Airbnb. I want to share something with you I was once told. One of the wisest things you can do when you host an Airbnb is find events in your area and let people in that community know that your place is available for out-of-towners. Many did this with the eclipse. You can do this as well. Your home could be an Airbnb. Seriously, it doesn't have to be your whole place. I mean, it could be. You'd be surprised what people are looking for when they travel. It's simple and it's really, really smart. You might want to think about it. You could be sitting on a whole new revenue stream. Concerts, sporting events, conferences. People are always on the move. Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.ca/host.
Welcome back to the program, 32 Thoughts, the podcast, presented by the GMC Sierra Elevation, Elliot.
Pump your tires.
Very nice. Be nicer if you pump mine every now and then, but that's fine, Elliot. I understand.
Who are you, Tim Thomas?
I was going to say, insert your 2011 Stanley Cup final jokes here, but I kind of walked into that one. A couple of things before I let everyone know who's playing on Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday. Congratulations to the one, the only, Connor McDavid. I know the accolades are many for Connor McDavid, and now we'll add another one to it. Connor McDavid with 120 points for the third consecutive season. So he'll join Nikita Kucherov and Nathan MacKinnon with 120 points this season. And again, as we all know, didn't look great for the Oilers earlier this season. Didn't look great for Connor McDavid earlier this season. But to everybody who said, relax, the Oilers will be fine and McDavid will be fine, good on you. And congratulations to Connor McDavid. Now, three seasons in a row with 120 points. Hockey Night in Canada Saturday, Elliot. You already referenced the Buffalo Sabres hosting the Toronto Maple Leafs, and curious to see how many Sabres fans have sold their Leafs tickets for that one. Carolina and Montreal, it is Ottawa and Winnipeg. Your late game, the Los Angeles Kings facing off against the Calgary Flames.
The boring Los Angeles Kings.
Oh, now all of a sudden everyone's discovered that they're playing the 1-3-1. Why did this just become a thing this week? Is it because Zadorov piped off about it?
Yes.
That's all that it was?
Yes.
And now everyone just sort of clued into like, oh yeah, they kind of
it's after
like
the trade deadline. We need somebody to tell us what to talk about. And Zadorov came through.
Thank you, Nikita Zadorov. See, the boring Los Angeles Kings.
Boring Jim Hiller.
Who just happened to have one of the best first lines in the entire NHL.
Boring.
With Kopitar Kempe and Quentin Byfield. No, nothing. You're still calling that
boring.
One boring, too?
Just boring.
All right. Facing off against the Calgary Flames. Ottawa, Winnipeg, Carolina, Montreal, Toronto, and the Buffalo Sabres. And that is Hockey Night in Canada on Saturday. All gets underway at 6:30 Eastern with Hockey Central and your host, Ron McLean. Closing thought from you?
Do you follow the OHL Cup at all?
I do. This one's thrilling. This is Oakville facing off against the Vaughan Kings. The Barrie Colts getting knocked out. A lot of us thought that it was going to come down to the Barrie Colts and the Vaughan Kings, 1-2 in the rankings pretty much all season long. But some fresh blood in there. Good on Oakville.
Well, they're going to play. The final is on Saturday.
Saturday.
And
yes.
So basically, well, just you should explain the OHL Cup to people who don't know.
Okay, so this is for the U16s, and this is, I mean, it's put together by the Ontario Hockey League. We used to carry it on Sportsnet Ontario. I loved being a part of it. It's always been one of my favorite tournaments. So after all the, you know, the OMHA and the Alliance and the GTHL playoffs are all done, they do what's called the OHL Cup, and a lot of teams earn their way in, and a lot of teams get invited in as well. And it's a wonderful tournament, and it takes place at Scotiabank Pond in Toronto, and it's packed with scouts and nervous parents and fans of just, you know, wonderful minor midget hockey. And it's really turned into, you know, a peek at the future of not just the Ontario Hockey League, but also the NHL. Like, you know, pick anyone, any prospect from Ontario, chances are they played in the OHL Cup. Like, the best team that I ever saw is actually a team that didn't win it, and that was Connor McDavid's Toronto Marlboros. They ended up losing to the Mississauga Rebels team led by Robbie Fabry. And you'll go through, like, the history of the OHL Cup, like, you'll go through all the teams, and it's a steady stream of, like, elite-level, high-end NHL players. And, you know, you'll see the guys that played in this year's tournament showing up in the NHL in 4 or 5 years. Essentially what I'm getting at here, marvelous tournament, elite level hockey, a lot of fun. You get to see some crazy fans and some crazy parents who are very, very invested in their kids.
Yes.
And you get to see some tremendous hockey, and best of luck to the two teams that made the finals, the team from Vaughan and the team from Oakville.
Well, I noticed, you know,
it's a great tournament. It's a great tournament.
It sounds like it. And I remember watching it when you worked on it, but so as you mentioned, the final is going to be the Oakville Rangers against the Vaughan Kings. And for those of you who are not familiar with Southwestern Ontario geography, Oakville is about 45 minutes west of Toronto. If you drive like Jeff, it's about 2 hours west of Toronto. If you drive like me, it's about 35 minutes. It's the home of Ron McLean. And Vaughan is just north of Toronto. And the Vaughan Kings, and the MVP for the Vaughan Kings in the semifinal with a goal was one Caleb Malhotra. There's another one of them.
Oh, dude, he's so good.
There's another Malhotra.
He's so good. He's awesome as well. He's He's fantastic.
So yeah, he's that's Manny's son, in case you're wondering. So congratulations to Manny and Caleb. And also, as we wrap up, I would like to our producer, Dom. I know this is a big weekend for you, Dom. So happy Easter to you, Dom, and to everyone who celebrates.
Thank you.
Perfect way to wrap up. Thanks for listening. Your next podcast comes to you as usual Monday morning. Have a great weekend. You know, one of the things the solar eclipse, remember that, reminded us is people will travel to have unique experiences, see things, and be part of events. We all saw how people congregated in areas that had the best view, the best safe view. And they all had to stay somewhere, and many used Airbnb. I want to share something with you I was once told. One of the wisest things you can do when you host an Airbnb is find events in your area and let people in that community know that your place is available for out-of-towners. Many did this with the eclipse. You can do this as well. Your home could be an Airbnb. Seriously, it doesn't have to be your whole place. I mean, it could be. You'd be surprised what people are looking for when they travel. It's simple and it's really, really smart. You might want to think about it. You could be sitting on a whole new revenue stream. Concerts, sporting events, conferences. People are always on the move. Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.ca/host.